You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next this hour, a story, as I say, that we regularly revisit, and that is the state of the Amazon rainforest. How much more of the rainforest is being chopped or burned down? Last year when we checked, the news wasn't good. Over 6 million acres gone in 2003. To give you an idea, that's about the size of Massachusetts. And now the latest figures are in, and the picture is even worse. We're up to 6.5 million acres lost in 2004. And according to a story in the LA Times this week, the Amazon is now a major source of world air pollution. The burning of the forest releases hundreds of millions of tons of carbon dioxide into the skies each year. And according to the Times, that makes Brazil one of the world's leading producers of greenhouse gases. So instead of soaking up carbon dioxide in all those trees, the Amazon has gone from becoming the world's lungs to the world's ashtray. Joining us now to talk more about what is happening in the Amazon is my guest, William Lawrence. He's staff scientist at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama. He's also president-elect of the Association for Tropical Biology and Conservation. He joins us from Panama. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Lawrence.
Thanks, Ira.
Give us the bad news first. How much of the Amazon did we lose? I said, what, 6.5 million acres?
Yeah, that's about right. It looks like we're probably looking at the last 3 years being probably the worst three consecutive years of deforestation that in the history of the Amazon, or certainly going back to 1988 when they started taking annual estimates of deforestation. So as you mentioned earlier on, going back to the early 1990s, we were losing about 3.5 million acres of forest a year in the Brazilian Amazon. That went up to about 4.5 million acres a year in the late 1990s and in the early part of this millennium. And then the last 3 years, about 6.5 million acres per year. So, and just in intuitive terms, that's going from about five football fields a minute in the early 1990s to about 7 football fields a minute in the late 1990s to about 10 football fields a minute in the last 3 years. So it's not a very good picture at all.
How could this drop off the radar screen?
Well, I don't think it's completely dropped off the radar screen. It's just that, the story does sort of reappear now and then. And, it's one of those things that just sort of is continuing on over time. And I think that we certainly do. I mean, it's obviously a positive thing to try to raise this on the radar screen and get people thinking about it more.
And what is driving this destruction? Is it the attempt to build more acreage for crop growing?
Well, it's a combination of factors. I think, actually the Lula administration in Brazil has been perplexed to some degree by these increases in deforestation. To some degree, that administration has focused a lot on poverty alleviation, and they have done some positive things for the environment. They've increased the staffing of their National Environment Agency, and I think the director of that agency, Marina Silva, is good. But in a more reactive way, they've set up some new reserves, they've allocated some new funds for monitoring and enforcement in the Amazon. They've also tried to crack down on corruption. But I think that these have been more reactive than proactive in the sense of reacting to things like the increasing deforestation and also the very tragic murder of the American nun Dorothy Stang, the 74-year-old nun who was an environmentalist and Amerindian activist in the Amazon. So I don't think so far there's been nearly enough attention being paid to addressing what I'd call the fundamental root causes of deforestation. One of the most important of these is a massive increase in highways and railroads and river channelization projects and hydroelectric dams and other kinds of infrastructure within the Amazon. We're just talking about it looks like in the next 5 or 10 years or so that the Amazon is really going to be crisscrossed by a series of these major new projects that are going to penetrate right into the heart of the basin. And unfortunately, these kinds of projects just tend to open up the frontier for spontaneous colonization and land speculation. You can get huge influxes of slash-and-burn farmers, hunters, illegal miners, ranchers, and we just very often see a process, it's like opening a Pandora's box, a spontaneous process of forest destruction and forest degradation. Another thing that's really contributed to the rapid deforestation in the Amazon has been big booms in soybeans and in beef and in timber, and this is partly due to the fact that the Brazilian currency, the real, has dropped significantly in value in the last several years, and that's made their exports more competitive. So we've seen the soybean area under soybeans increasing from about 25 to 50 million acres, so this is a mega business now worth about $10 billion annually in exports. We've seen cattle increasing from about 20 to 60 million head between 1990 and today. We've seen a big increase in timber. And unfortunately, most of these kinds of land uses are not necessarily benefiting the smaller landowners and the more impoverished people. They tend to be benefiting larger business interests in the Amazon. Much of this is being exported to China and into East Asia and also to Europe. I think that what we're seeing today is also a product of really long-term policies in the Amazon. Brazil, for a long time, has had a policy of encouraging immigration into the Amazon, both to secure the frontier and also just as part of their development policy. We've seen, going back to the 1960s, there's a population of about 2 million people in the Brazilian Amazon. Today, there's over 20 million people, and they've accomplished this through things like tax-free zones and free trade zones and forest colonization projects and subsidies for cattle ranching. And these populations are now in place, and they're demanding more development themselves. And so this is part of the process. It's, in some sense, the chickens are coming home to roost. Also in Brazil, the ministries, you know, you have, in, just like the United States and other countries, you have environment ministries and you have ministries that are more oriented towards development. Well, these development ministries are very powerful in Brazil, and they're really holding sway in terms of a lot of the decisions that are being made. And then finally, the last thing, Ira, I think we'd mention is just there's a very serious problem of enforcement and governance in the Amazonian frontier. I mean, the Brazilian government itself estimates that about 80% of all the timber cutting in the Amazon is illegal. It's stolen timber. It's being taken without any form of environmental control. Regulations that are in place for reducing the amount of land clearing are oftentimes ignored. In fact, very recently there was a huge corruption scandal that erupted in Brazil. Just within the last week or two, about 90 people have been arrested. Unfortunately, 40 of these within IBAMA, which is Brazil's National Environment Agency, and it's a giant timber scandal. It's responsible, they think, for something like $370 million of illegal timber entering the market since about going back to 1990. So that's been a big problem. There's illegal colonization, spontaneous colonization, there's illegal gold mining, there's increasingly illegal drug smuggling, corruption of the Amerindians. So it's very difficult to enforce environmental regulations out in the vast Amazonian frontier, and I think this is one of the reasons why we've continually emphasized the importance of thinking very carefully about the expanding infrastructure, because these projects that penetrate out into the frontier areas, it's just extremely difficult for the government to control processes out there once those highways and roads and other transportation projects are penetrating out into the frontier. It's just a daunting prospect to try to control what's going on.
Are there any strong voices outside the government or influential voices that could be, I don't know, the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, people like that who might influence the money flow? Because, you know, following the money seems to be what influences stuff here.
Yeah, there are some voices. I mean, there certainly are voices within Brazil. There's prominent conservationists within the country, and I think the environment minister, Marina Silva, is certainly a very committed person, and other people within the Ministry of Environment. It's not that there's, that's lacking within Brazil. I think, though, that the forces of development now are just very powerful within the country, and it's really a juggernaut that's quite difficult to try to stop. Some of the solutions, I think that to some degree, I don't think that the increasing deforestation that we're seeing now is really a surprise, because it's as I said, it's kind of the chickens coming home to roost. We've been seeing these strong sort of pro-development policies and the infrastructure expansion, and I think that probably we won't see too much of a change in that situation until there's a sort of a fundamental rethink, particularly among these very powerful ministries like the Planning Ministry and INCRA, which is the Industry for Colonization and Agricultural Reform in the Amazon, and SUDAM, which is the Amazonian Development Superintendency. These kinds of powerful ministries in the country, there needs to be more of an integration in terms of environmental planning and bringing environmental planning integrally in terms of the kinds of development schemes that are going on. And then also, of course, as we mentioned, there's really a dire need for better enforcement. I think this is one of the big challenges in the Amazon.
What has been the U.S. policy toward the Amazon?
Well, I think that in the last several years, unfortunately, there has not been a lot of support from the U.S. in terms of Amazonian conservation. There are some major international programs, such as it's called the Pilot Program to Protect the Brazilian Rainforest, which has been mostly supported by European countries. And unfortunately, this U.S.'s contribution to that program has been pretty minimal. I think that, I think this is something that we've been seeing more recently. In fact, I would just say, speaking personally as someone who tries to work in terms of conservation and sustainable development in developing countries, is that unfortunately, within the last 5 or 6 years or so, under the current administration, I think we've actually seen probably a significant loss of credibility, in the sense that the administration's policies. I mean, one of the first things, for example, the administration did was when it came into office was to cut support for international family planning programs. Of course, with U.S. withdrawal from Kyoto was disastrous internationally, I think, in terms of U.S. credibility. I was unfortunate enough to be testifying in Brazil's National Congress just 3 days after President Bush announced that the U.S. was withdrawing from Kyoto, and the Brazilians were just incensed about this. I mean, they had been admonished in the past by the U.S., of course, for deforestation, and here was the U.S. really, doing something that was seen as a serious broach of their international obligations. And, you know, it's funny, I think people actually pay very close attention to it doesn't matter where you are in the world, and what happens in the U.S. is big news. It's the world's economic and military superpower, and people really pay attention to what's going on in terms of policies in the U.S., say policies with respect to roadless areas or mining in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. These kinds of policies really resonate, I'm not pleased to say this as an American, but I think that our credibility right now internationally has really fallen to an all-time low, and I think it's something we need to be concerned about the Amazon, obviously, and do more to support it, and I think we also need to think about our own backyard and try to improve our own situation. And then a final thing I would just say is I think it's important to maintain pressures on some of the international agencies, such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund and the Inter-American Development Bank, that are lending money for a number of these big development projects in the Amazon. For example, the World Bank, under its International Financial Corporation, has been one of the big funders of the soybean expansion in the state of Mato Grosso, which is the area which has seen the biggest increase in deforestation recently. And when the World Bank does that, it actually lends credibility to Amazonian development, and other banks then tend to jump in and lend a lot of money for these kinds of projects. So under the current administration, we've seen a new director who's been appointed now, Paul Wolfowitz, and the jury's still out. Of course, we need to give him an opportunity to see how he's going to do. But one will hope that World Bank and other kinds of international lending bodies are going to make sound environmental policies a key part of their criteria for future investments. I think this is something that needs to be looked at very closely. And the prior president of the World Bank, James Wolfensohn, was in fact, for example, having a very close look, a close scrutiny of these loans to the state of Mato Grosso and in terms of the development of soybeans. So I think that's another area where we can really try to maintain some support and some international pressure.
Talking with Bill Lawrence, a staff scientist at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flato. Let's go to the phone, see if we can get a few calls in. Let's go to Chris in Dallas, Oregon. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Ira?
Hi there.
I kind of have a comment or question, and the comment is, I don't think that anybody's going to do anything really to stop the deforestation of the forest. And so my question is, how much longer does it look like it will last? And I can take my answer off
here.
Okay,
thanks for calling. Yeah, how much forest, how long till the forest is gone? Phil?
There are, of course, reserves and different kinds of areas that are set up within the Amazon. But I guess if you just extrapolated from the current rate of deforestation, I'd have to do a quick bit of math in my head here. Mm-hmm. I think we'd probably be looking at something like about another 80 years or so in terms of pretty much total destruction of the Amazon. But of course, the Amazon comprises 60% of the world's tropical rainforest. I don't think we won't see complete destruction of the Amazon, but what we will very likely see is large-scale fragmentation of the forests on a basin-wide scale. We'll see continued high levels of deforestation. There's a lot of concern that we might destabilize the Amazonian climatic system. The Amazon's a bit unique in the sense that much of the rainfall in the Amazon is actually generated by the forest itself. It's so big, and 30 to 50% of the rain that falls on the Amazon is almost immediately recycled back up into the atmosphere via a process called evapotranspiration from the normal metabolic or physiological processes of plants. And that's water vapor that helps to maintain consistent cloud cover and rainfall, especially during the dry season when forests are most vulnerable to fires. And so there's a big concern that, I mean, we're seeing big fires now, and huge fires, catastrophic fires now in the Amazon, particularly during El Nino years, but more and more we're starting to see these really big fires even during normal years. And so there's a lot of concern that we could potentially destabilize the entire Amazon ecosystem and make this whole entire system much more vulnerable to catastrophic wildfires in the future.
I was also struck by the fact that the LA Times was talking about that the Amazon now has become the giant, biggest single source of carbon dioxide.
Instead
of becoming the lungs, it's becoming the ashtray.
Yeah, I think that's essentially correct. If we can maintain intact areas of Amazon forest, the current evidence suggests that, in fact, they're acting as what's called a carbon sink. The forests are actually growing faster in response to the increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and they're actually those intact forests are effectively sucking up and absorbing some of the CO2, a fraction of the CO2 that humankind is producing each year as a consequence of industrial emissions and automobiles and also tropical deforestation. But unfortunately, because the forests are being destroyed so rapidly, a lot of the carbon, and there's about 200 tons of carbon in the above-ground vegetation in every hectare, every 2.5 acres of forest. And so when that's burned, a lot of that just goes up into the atmosphere as carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide and nitrous oxide and other greenhouse gases. So, yes, unfortunately, Amazon is becoming a major source of carbon emissions as a consequence of just the very rapid rate of destruction.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad you came on to talk about it. We're sorry about the news. So we'll check in again with you periodically, maybe same time next year, and hopefully we'll have better news then.
Thank you, Bill,
for taking time to be with us. William Lawrence, a staff scientist at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute in Panama, is also president-elect of the Association of Tropical Biology and Conservation. He was talking to us from Panama today. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a look at two new studies that show how genes might influence behavior. Just one change in a small gene in a fly is having giant reverberations around the world of genetics. Stay with us. We'll be back to talk more about it.